This insert is brought to you by Radio K Pulpit 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.
Prof. Renata, good having you back on breakfast. Good morning. I hope you're well.
Good morning. You know, all good, and it's a beautiful morning. I'm glad for a little bit of respite from the rain.
Yeah, I agree with that. Renata, I was proxy to a conversation this past weekend where two people next to me were having a conversation. One person said to the other, you know, I this is really bothering me. You know, I am ADHD. And then the other person said, do you really have ADHD or are you Google diagnosed? And I thought, kind of smiled at this. But very often we want to attribute some of our, I don't know, personality flaws or the way we see the world, and we want to label ourselves ADHD. It's certainly way deeper than that.
Absolutely. And it goes both ways. On the one hand, it's way too easy to watch some of the social media and to TikTok and Google, as you say, and recognize some symptoms and even memorizing the symptoms and presenting with it to the psychiatrist or the psychologist and say, you know, like I read up on this and I'm convinced I have ADHD. However, there's many conditions that can mimic symptoms of ADHD, from depression to anxiety to excessive screen time, a lack of sleep. So there's many other things that can present with ADHD-like symptoms. However, on the other hand, the vast majority of children in South Africa that truly have ADHD is still not recognized as such or diagnosed. We can talk about access to care and access to services, and obviously that plays a role. Stigma plays a huge role. But I think what we want to talk about today specifically is the stereotype view of ADHD only affecting boys, and they're loud and boisterous and naughty or lazy and not performing academically. And that is the stereotypical view, which might not be accurate whatsoever.
Yeah, and they may very well in the classrooms, and older than that, of course, as well, young girls struggling with ADHD, but they're not bouncing off the walls like the boys. So we assume they obviously don't have ADHD, but maybe it could still be there. What would we need to look out for if they're not bouncing off the walls, as we say?
I think we must remember that, as you mentioned, girls are also affected by ADHD. But if you sit in a classroom with 40 kids, you're very grateful for the one quiet girl. But that girl might be the one that's daydreaming. It might be the one that is so anxious about performing and meeting the societal expectations, being emotionally composed and high achieving and socially pleasing. Girls with ADHD often develop sophisticated coping strategies, masking their symptoms through working extremely hard or even being rigid, and it might mask their mental exhaustion, which really contributes to them having low self-esteem, anxiety, depression, and this painful sense of never being enough.
Wow. So just because it's not hyperactivity doesn't mean it's not ADHD.
Absolutely not. And that's also why we see that girls are often diagnosed later, except those that does have the combined or the hyperactive type of ADHD. They come to the fore early years. But we often see that it's unmasked later in adolescence, when a teenager might already present with anxiety or depression. And only then, when we work with them, we realize that they have untreated ADHD. Or even in adulthood, specifically in life transitions, for example, motherhood, where you now suddenly have to juggle career and the household and, which can become extremely overwhelming. And your coping skills that you used in the past is not working anymore, or there's literally just not enough time to compensate for the excessive amount of time that you use to do the activities you need to do.
What about in women now? Are they being diagnosed, considered to be something else, depression, anxiety, and they've been given sedatives and antidepressants, when actually there is a different way to be dealing with? You can find that ADHD is the underlying cause and deal that appropriately. Are we seeing women out there that are being treated incorrectly? They're treated for symptoms instead of finding the underlying cause?
Yes, absolutely. Anxiety, as you mentioned, depression, borderline personality disorder. They often can present with substances also, or eating disorders. And the other common misdiagnosis is bipolar disorder type 2, where the mild bipolar disorder. So we often see the misdiagnosis, but more commonly we see the missed diagnosis. So you can have both. You can have ADHD and another condition. And then also the missed diagnosis in the sense of not having had the opportunity to access care and not being diagnosed and not presenting with the symptoms because you thought it's an internal flaw of yourself. You just need to work harder, pray harder, or whatever the case might be to overcome this that you have. So we often see that, but we need to really be vigilant to the feelings of chronic overwhelm, forgetfulness, procrastination, the masking behaviors, the emotional dysregulation. Rejection-sensitive dysphoria is something that's currently trending almost in social media, but also difficulty completing tasks, organizing, managing time, missing small details. And this is chronic. But the thing is, it's just not only now. We really have to do an in-depth interview and a diagnostic consultation to see that this is something that has always been there across the lifespan and that it's also affecting various aspects of your life. It's not only an occupational problem that you have.
Yeah, you've touched on it there. I wanted to ask you around the diagnosis. It's not just oh, that's what you've got. I get a feeling this is actually quite an extensive interview, consultation, conversation, looking back at life, looking at where you are now, and that takes not a Google search, not an influencer. That's going to take somebody like yourself and others in your profession, Professor Skuman, to sit down and actually draw out that final diagnosis. And we need to do that, right?
Indeed. And it's almost easier to diagnose in childhood because at a certain age, you look at the developmental things. There's only 7 years, for example, to review of the life. And often we then diagnose early with all the, before the comorbidity surface. But in adulthood, we have 40 years to look at and to review and really untease. And then often there's already the comorbidities present. And we also need to treat some of these comorbidities before we can use ADHD medication. Often, sometimes you can start the ADHD medication immediately, but often we have to treat the comorbidities, and even general practitioners do not have the time to spend an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours with a patient to really address all aspects and untease it. You cannot just present with a Google list of symptoms and ask a doctor for the medication. It's not right, and you will be more prone to side effects and the important other things that might be impeding or maybe comorbid might be missed. And then the final thing is, it's not a quick fix. Medication works, and medication works quickly and rapidly, but there still needs to be other interventions, psychotherapy, occupational therapy, workplace accommodations, lifestyle interventions, exercise, sleep, screen time management. All of those is also very important to address in the holistic management of ADHD.
Is it something that is more prevalent now than it has been, or did we not know to look for it before? Is it a, I don't want to say disease, that doesn't seem right. Is it a condition of modern society, or has this always been around but just never really fully understood and correctly diagnosed?
Yeah, no, it's always been there. I mean, you can look at the theories on ADHD that it even was an evolutionary advantage at one stage for survival. But the first clear cases is written up already in 1700s and 1800s, especially in Germany. And then later on in 1902 was the first time that George Still described the symptoms of ADHD like we know it today. It only really it went under different names in the past, in the previous century, but the diagnostic criteria as we know now is there since the early 2000s already. And the reason why we see an increase in diagnosis is twofold. A, more people are aware, so there has been more awareness of the condition, more education, so people are identified better. So that gives the false sense that there's no more ADHD. On the other hand, there is a bit of an overdiagnosis, and specifically what we talk to now. People do a Google search, they go with a checklist of symptoms, they go to the nearest general practitioner, and they get the medication. And it might not really be the diagnosis. So it's a little bit of both. I would hope that it's more the positive in the sense of that there's increased awareness. And even if you have symptoms and you present to a psychiatrist and it is not ADHD, That's also good because there can still be interventions and correct diagnosis on what is actually going on that can help you to have a more fulfilling and fruitful life.
Yeah, and that could be life-changing. So don't miss out on the opportunity to get the help that you need. The voice of Professor Renata Skooman, member of the South African Society of Psychiatrists, also head of healthcare leadership at Stellenbosch Business School. Enlightening conversation. Thank you for your time, Prof, and have yourself a really great Wednesday.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This insert was brought to you by Radio K Pulpit, 7 to 9 a.m. Please visit kpulpit.co.za.